Welcome.
I got a question for you this morning.
Do you trust God? Now, I got to tell you a little secret here. This morning, I was in the office at Robson Park before we started, and I said to Rick, Rick's the RP congregational leader, I said, Rick, do you trust God? And his immediate answer was this. He went, "Yeah," and he stopped. He pulled back a bit. And I said, Rick, that's the perfect answer. Well done. You know what we want to do? We want to say yes. Immediately we want to say yes, don't we? We say, of course I trust God. But then we step back and we say, oh, okay, wait a minute. If somebody came and inspected my life, would they say that I do trust God, or would they say, well, no, actually, Cam, you trust you? I mean, if somebody came and they looked at all of my time, my schedule, would they say, there's a man that trusts God, or there's a man that needs to be in control of his own life and make sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed? Same thing with finances. If they looked at my checkbook, would they say, there's a man who trusts God completely? Or would they say, well, maybe a little bit he trusts God, but there's some occasions where he doesn't all the way. Or about the gifts that he's given me. Do I trust God or do I trust myself? Even about how we use the earth. Do we trust him? You know, we're in this series called Missionary. And it's not just about us becoming missionaries, but it's really about understanding who God is. And therefore, how do we live? Week one, we began by talking about the reality that we see God differently. We learn to see God as the Missio Dei, or the God of mission. That God's not just up there somewhere desiring us to come worship him. He's actually a God who's constantly going, constantly seeking and sending. And therefore, we too understand that our identity is in him. So we become these local missionaries. Week two, we ask the question of, do you love God? We love God. And we discovered that we could see God in a brand new way. This way of this incredibly loving God. This God that we can't even describe his love with words. It's so big, so vast. And therefore, our response, our sense of worship. How do we respond? We studied in the Old Testament this idea of worship being about what we bring, not just about what we get. We bring him a response of love. We tell stories of where we've seen God at work. Last week, week three, we asked another question. Not just do you love God, but do you believe in God? God is this all-knowing. This all-knowing being, this omniscient being. He knows all things, and he knows full well that I could never on my own know him. So what does he do? In all of his knowledge, he reveals himself to us. He tells us about who he is in so many different ways. Our response then is to be able to say, Lord, I receive that, and so I'm going to spend my time and my energy learning to understand who you are, not just to know about God, but to actually know him. So we come to week four, and we ask that question again. We trust God. We want to say yes. Sometimes we have to admit we got a long way to go. Well, Paul talks about this in Ephesians chapter 5. That's our text this morning. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15 to 17. If you've got your study guide, I've given a bit of an outline there. I may change a few words on there, but at least we've got a blank sheet of paper that we can do some writing. Let me read Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15 to 17. And I think this is really a question of, do you trust God with your time? Do we trust him with the use of our time? Listen to these words of Paul before I dive into a couple things. He says, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. I want to talk about two things this morning. The first is that we need to redeem time, or how we see time. The second is that we need to renew our minds, or said another way, how we use time. Paul dives in right at the beginning. He says, be careful. Actually, he doesn't say that. He says, be very careful. What does he mean? And we hear him saying that. Are we listening to a whisper where he kind of suggests something? Or do we hear somebody in a loud, demonstrative voice saying, Cam, wake up? I think it's that way. He says, pay attention. Don't live an unexamined life. Instead, stop. Pay attention to what I'm about to say. Now, if I said to you guys this morning that I hadn't seen the dentist since I was 8 years old, what would you say? Besides gross. You'd say, well, that's not very smart. Hey, what if you got a cavity? Or if I told you that I don't regularly go to the doctor, what would you say? Well, that's kind of stupid. You're old. And I mean, after you get to a certain age, you're supposed to see the doctor all the time. Or if I told you that we don't ever go to a financial planner or a banker and begin to kind of talk about our finances, or if I don't ever sort of investigate and go to a coach or go to a physical trainer and sort of pay attention to my health that way, or if I don't, you get the idea, right? You kind of think, what are you doing? So let me throw it on this one. Why do we spend so much time physically or emotionally or financially sort of checking up on all these things? And then spiritually, Paul says, get your head out of the sand. He says it's so important that you get somebody to be a mirror to you, or somebody that is spiritually mature to look at you and say, Cam, it's time that we looked at how you use time. Friends, I think one of the greatest spiritual things we could do is actually stop and say, oh God, how do I see time? How do I use time? So here's the challenge for us this morning. I think this is what Paul is saying. Be very careful then how you live. Not as unwise, but as wise. Find somebody. Somebody that loves you, but somebody loves you enough to tell you the truth. And say to them, here's my schedule. Tell me what you see. We run around like chickens with our heads cut off. And we fool ourselves. We tell ourselves, oh yeah, we got it under control. Everything's fine. I got it set. When in reality, what we need is somebody to come along and hold up a mirror. Don't be unwise, Paul says. And the unwise or the unwisdom part of that is that we never investigate. We never get a checkup. Do it. Do it this week. Get somebody to take note or hold up a mirror about your time. Then he says this. He says in verse 16, my text, it says, making the most of every opportunity. But in other texts, it's translated this way, redeeming the time. Now, when I say the words, making the most of every opportunity, every single one of us hears that, and our minds begin to think, okay, here's what that means. And I know what most of us think. Well, here's what the world thinks. It's like this big spectrum. Making the most of every opportunity. If we're talking about time, what's Paul on about? I've got this book on my shelf. It's called Getting More Done in Less Time. It's time management stuff, right? It's somehow that we could cram more stuff into a limited amount of time, or we could somehow, second by second, make better use of our time. Our minds go there. Well, friends, what Paul is saying here is that's an old lens. That's an old way of thinking, where you say, my time is mine, how can I get more out of it? And what Paul's saying here when he says, don't be unwise, redeem the time, is he's saying there's a brand new lens that you can put on, a brand new lens that you can begin to see life through, so that your time is not yours and you get more out of it, but actually, it's his time. It's not my time. It's his time, and I get to use it for the kingdom. Now, there's a problem. I think in this spectrum, most of us, we're not here anymore. We get that. It's not all my time that I just use for my own stuff. I get that. But I seem to get stuck partway in between those two poles. It's kind of like this. I wrote a story in the study guide a couple of weeks ago about, remember the situation where Jesus met this guy who was blind? Here's this guy coming up to Jesus, you know, he wants to be healed, and Jesus does this kind of weird thing. He spits in the guy's eyes, rubs it. Remember the story? And remember what happened? He says, can you see? The guy says, I think I can. But these people look like trees. And Jesus says, okay, we're not done here yet. So he spits again and he wipes it. Now the guy sees clearly. I think we're sort of like the guy who sees people, but they look like trees when it comes to our time. Because what we've done is we don't say, well, it's my time, how can I use it for my benefit? I think we've graduated from there. But I think we're stuck here where we say, it's my time, how can I use it for him? And friends, that's not what Paul's saying. He's inviting us to not be unwise, but to be wise, to redeem the time, which means we come all the way over here where we see it properly. It's his time. You see, when we learn to trust him with everything that we've got, we realize that it's his time and he's about to lead us on the most amazing adventure we could ever imagine. Paul says, be very careful. Have somebody help you to inspect how you see time. Redeem the time or make the most of every opportunity. And then his third sentence or his third little phrase in here, he says, because the days are evil. Okay, that comes out a bit funny in English too, doesn't it? What does he mean, the days are evil? It simply means this. The early church began to think that Christ was coming back soon, like immediately, like maybe even tomorrow. And so therefore, why put off till tomorrow what could be done today? But instead, live in an expectancy that Jesus is coming back tomorrow. The days are short. We don't know when he's coming back. So do it now. Invite somebody today to help you with your time. Redeem the time. Begin today to see all of time through kingdom lenses. And don't wait. Don't put it off. But instead, do it now. That's what Paul advocates for us to do in Toronto this week. As I was there, I was talking to one pastor who said, you know, I was working with one couple in my church and there was an issue. There was a sin issue in their lives. And I began to tell them, he said, about God's best for their life, God's plan. They said, oh, we know that. We know that would be better. But right now, we're going to do this way. When it comes to later in our life, then we'll change. Friends, we do this all the time. I do this all the time. I procrastinate and say, somehow I think I know better. And what I'm really doing is I'm saying, I really don't trust him completely. Do it today. Redeem the time. Come with me to the second thing we're going to talk about this morning. In verse 17, he says, not only are I wanting you to redeem the time, I want you to renew your minds. Or not only how do we see time, not as mine, but as his. How do we use it? So he says there in verse 17, in a verse that's almost paralleled with the Romans verse that we saw last week about transforming our minds. He says, don't be foolish. What does he mean, don't be foolish? Well, he's pushing us further to let go of seeing our time as our own and to begin to use it as if it's God's time. We've all said this, haven't we, at some point? I've got half an hour to kill. Or I got a little bit of time to burn. And whenever we say those things, all we're doing is presenting to other people around us that we think our time is our own. So what do? We waste time. We turn on the TV, we get entertained, we watch too many videos, we go on the internet too long. And not that those things are ever wrong in and of themselves, but they are when we begin to see it through, it's my time, I do my thing. Let me go to the other end of the spectrum. Not just killing time, but how about filling time or overfilling time? I think more of us in our culture today maybe have that sort of issue than we do the other end. It's somehow we overwork or we overschedule and we have no margins in our lives. It's that book that I quoted to you a minute ago, How Do You Get More Done in Less Time? I think many times we overschedule ourselves because we're afraid or we have a lack of purpose. And we know that in our culture, as we allow culture to squeeze us into its mold, we begin to get caught up in the rat race and life goes faster and faster and faster and faster. And there are less margins and less margins and less margins. Why? Because we see time as our own. You know all the examples of how life is going by at blistering speed. One of the examples I shared in Toronto when we were talking about this on the weekend is that 200 years ago, this is gross, 200 years ago it took a farmer 5 years to grow a pig up to 130 pounds. Today, 6 months to get it to 220 pounds and it's slaughtered before the baby teeth are even out of its mouth. Lots more gross stories like that, but you get the idea. You caught that one, right? I mean, there's all kinds of evidences of how fast things are going, and we see examples of it all the time from fast food stuff, where we eat our food in 5 or 7 minutes and wolf down dinner so we can get on to the next thing, or we go through drive-thrus and all kinds of stuff. We see road rage. We see a lack of intimacy in all kinds of relationships. Just an evidence over and over and over again of the pace of life increasing. There are consequences because of that. Anger levels have gone up, stress levels have gone up, weight levels have gone up, relationships have decreased. But the greatest one of all is what you've heard me say before from one of my favorite authors and favorite human beings, Dallas Willard, who says, it is a destruction. This increase of pace of life is one of the greatest causes of the destruction of our souls. How do we help each other with this? There are three Greek words that are used to tell time. The first is a fancy word called chronos. Now, you know what that is already. I think you've heard that because in English we have a little bit of a parallel with that. But we begin to tell time with a watch, second by second, minute by minute, right? That's chronos time. But then there's another word called kairos. And kairos is not so much about the second by second, minute by minute, but it's about the value of time. It's valuable time. And it's kind of the stuff that dads say every once in a while when they're busy and they get bugged. Hey, how come you're not spending more time with your kids? And they say, well, it's not the sort of amount of time I'm spending. It's the quality of time, right? That's that kairos word. There's a third word. And this is what I think Paul's driving at here for us when he talks about redeeming the time and not being foolish. The third word is aeon. And that word is not how do we tell time with a clock or even how do we tell time with a calendar, but it's how we tell time with a compass. Because aeon means the direction of life in which we're living. It's about leaving a legacy. It's about how do we begin to say, God, what direction would you have me live? And that's what Paul's pushing us towards here. So how do we do that? Well, let me give us a couple of things that I think would help us before we quit this morning. Verse 17 again, do not be foolish, killing time or filling time. But instead, he says, understand what the Lord's will is. One of the problems I think we have with our Christianity today is that we believe the gospel is about Jesus' death and resurrection only. Of course it's about his death and resurrection. Of course we need to celebrate that. But why is it that we forget sometimes that part of the good news is about the reality that Jesus came to live and demonstrates to us how we should live? If we are followers of Jesus, if we're disciples of Jesus, then shouldn't we, when we want to know how to live our days, when we want to know how to use our time, shouldn't we turn around and say, well, how did Jesus use his? And we come to scriptures and we begin to watch and we begin to read and we begin to understand, well, how did Jesus use his? We're going to start a new series in a couple of weeks asking those very questions. So I don't need to go into lots of it today, but here's a couple of examples. He slept sometimes. Sleeping's a good thing. He played. He celebrated around the table with all kinds of friends. He rested. He worked. He knew his purpose. See, if we watch the life of Jesus, what do we see in his ministry? We see that he knew exactly where he was going. He was headed to Jerusalem. And he knew that he was not to be distracted from it. But there are lots of stories in the Gospels where Jesus, even though he was living in a direction, allowed the Father to speak into his life and say, stop for a minute. Pause. I've got somebody I want you to meet. I've got something I want you to do right here. See, if we're going to learn something from Jesus at all about what direction we live, we need to recognize what Jesus says in John chapter 5 when he says, I only do what I see my Father doing. Redeeming the time, we see it through a new lens, a kingdom lens. It's His time. But when He says, don't be foolish, but understand the Lord's will, what He's inviting us to do is to say, I will use my time. I will use the time He's given me to do the things He's asked me to do. How do we do that? Can I give you two suggestions as we work to a close? Eliminate hurry. I love the quote from Dallas Willard where he says, ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. Ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life, for it's a destruction of our souls. When's the last time you slept 8 hours a night, 3 nights in a row? Remember when we went to class, I think I've told you this before, we went to class with Dallas. He lectured for the first day, and we came to the end of the first day, and he said to the whole class that somebody was stupid enough to ask him a question about homework. And he says, here's your homework. I want you for the next 3 nights to sleep 10 hours a night. And I mean, I just felt like laughing my head off. Like, how in the world? 10 hours? I haven't slept 10 hours since I was like 3. But he says, I know. He says, I know, especially people in church and people in ministry, you're sleep deprived. How do you expect to hear the voice of God when you can't even hear, you don't hear anything else because you're so tired and trying to stay awake? There's another way. When's the last time you obeyed the speed limits for the entire day? Slow down. Oh, it's so painful. Ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. When's the last time that you took longer to eat dinner than you did to cook it? Now, I'm not talking about, the crock pot kind of meals where you had to all day. Okay, we can let you go on that one. There's just something rich about table fellowship where we sit down. Instead of the task being, how much food can I cram into my mouth in the shortest amount of time so I can get on to something else after dinner? Instead for it to be, how can I interact with somebody? And not just so I hear their story, but so that I allow the Father to speak to me about what's going on in that person's life, and I get to hear my dad speaking. Friends, we need to ruthlessly eliminate hurry as a way of understanding what it means to redeem the time and to be wise, to know what God's will is. Here's the second. We need to practice the Sabbath. There's a couple of practices we have at Southside that I think are all a part of what it means to use His time in His way. You know, when we wake up in the morning, I think one of the things that we've encouraged each other to do is to the very, very first thing of the day. Good morning, Lord. Now, I know when I jump out of bed some mornings, I've got this big, long list of stuff I got to do for the day. And I know that if somebody actually reflected back to me, they would say, Cam, you're waking up in the morning seeing this as your day, and you're thinking, how are you going to get through it? But what if we stopped, and what if we, at the beginning of the day, woke up in the morning and say, good morning, Lord. This is your day. How would you like me to spend it? Now, I know you've got to say, well, okay, I got to go to work, and I got to go shopping, and I got to do, and I'm not talking about that. Of course, and God knows that. But what if about, instead of it being, I got to go shopping, it's, as I'm shopping, what do you got for me? Is there somebody I'll meet in the store? Is there something that you'll say to me in the midst of this? As I'm at work today, I know I got to be productive and I got to please the boss and I got to do all these things. I got that. But is there some conversation you want me to have? It's not my day that I get to use in the way I want. It's His day. Lord, how will you have me to use it? The second practice, I think, is equally, if not even more important. You know what it is. It's the best answer to, do you trust God? It's the Sabbath. For 6 days, God worked, and on the seventh day, He rested, and He called it holy. So when I work more than 6 days, when I don't sort of set aside the Sabbath as a day for Him, or as actually a day to receive something from Him so that I might declare it absolutely to the nth degree, God, I'm going to take this day, and I'm going to make it yours. Why? Because then I'm saying, I trust in you, not in me. One of the greatest books on the Sabbath that I've come across is actually by a Jew. The Jews got Sabbath. Sometimes they understood it as law more than gift. But Abraham Heschel is a great Jewish theologian. Listen to these quotes. Listen to these things he says about the Sabbath. He says this: sanctifying the Sabbath is part of our imitation of God, but it also becomes a way to find his presence. When I ignore Sabbath, I literally am saying to the world around me, God is not trustworthy. I don't trust him. But when I practice, when I observe Sabbath and really understand what it's about, I'm saying, I trust him because I know his presence. Sabbath is not just about refraining from work. It's about creating a restfulness that is part of celebration. Friends, at Southside, we've said we're going to take a practice of Sabbath being from Saturday night at 6 to Sunday night at 6. So that Saturday night when the clock strikes 6, we just say, you know what? The work week is done. Yay. And we're going to party. And we're going to have friends over, neighbors over. We're going to have a celebration of being able to say, our God is good and he's trustworthy. And now we're going to stop and recognize his presence. And somewhere in the midst of the evening, we're going to say, not going to stay up late and so that we're tired coming in here on Sunday morning. But we're going to say, Sunday morning's coming. And I want to be ready. And so let's begin to pray that we will recognize God's presence even amongst us this morning. For in the Sabbath, Heschel says, the soul is resurrected. It's recreated. Here's my favorite. Close with this. The goal is creating the Sabbath as a foretaste of paradise. The Sabbath is a metaphor for paradise and a witness of God's presence. Friends, our God is a God who is a missionary God. He's constantly sending. And he invites us to respond to him by loving him with all of our hearts, loving him with all of our minds, loving him with all of our strength, or, put a different way, by coming to trust him with our time, our treasures, our talents, even all of creation. We can trust him because it's his, not ours. And he allows us, he invites us to begin to see it with new lenses. Let me invite you to ask this week hard questions. How do I see my time? Is it mine or his? How am I using the time that he's given me? Is it for my benefits or do I see it through kingdom lenses and use it for kingdom?